In the United States, we felt that it was a public good to digitize the nation's health infrastructure. Many countries around the world have since shared that philosophy. And our approach was to build on the foundation of private healthcare IT systems, but to compel those systems to work with each other, such that if a doctor on system A was working with a hospital on system B and seeing a patient who's insured by company Z, that those organizations could speak a common language, even if all of their back-end systems were effectively proprietary.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Imagine a world where your doctor has real-time access to your complete health records, enabling truly coordinated care across every provider and health event. This seamless data sharing would unlock better outcomes and lower costs. Well, that future is rapidly becoming a reality, and our guest today is at the forefront of making it happen. My name is Alex Merwin from AWS, and on this episode, we'll dive into the cutting-edge work Care Journey is doing to integrate siloed healthcare data and provide actionable insights to drive value-based care. Care Journey is a healthcare analytics company that specializes in processing claims data from CMS, commercial payers, and others. By applying advanced analytics, they derive predictive insights and care gap notifications for over 300 million patient lives across ACOs, health systems, payers, life science companies, and more. You'll learn how Care Journey is leveraging AWS services and FHIR APIs to ingest massive amounts of data in real time, identify timely interventions, and route patients to the right providers at the right time. From flagging potential fraud to closing care gaps, their solutions are empowering healthcare organizations to operate more efficiently and provide higher quality coordinated care. This is a special episode as we have two guests. Anish Chopra, the president of Care Journey, will share his firsthand experiences helping customers unlock the promise of value-based care through data integration and analytics. He'll discuss Care Journey's role in enabling the new Provider Access API for external payer data sharing. He is joined by Mirza Baig from the AWS Health AI team, working on architecture and product, who explores how cloud platforms like AWS are evolving to simplify data connectivity across the healthcare ecosystem. I really enjoyed this conversation as it's a deep dive into recent regulatory changes and how they'll impact healthcare data interoperability and how we can all better use technology to improve patient outcomes. Let's go. I'm Alex Merwin, and I'm really pleased to be joined by Anish Chopra from Care Journey and Mirza Baig from AWS. Welcome. Thanks so much for joining me today, gents.
Thanks for having us.
Alex.
Yeah, of course. So Anish, maybe you can just briefly introduce yourself and share what Care Journey does.
Thank you. I'm Anish Chopra. I'm the president and co-founder of Care Journey. We are an open data and analytics platform focused on building a trusted benchmark for the highest value doctors, hospitals, other facilities on the move to value-based care. We currently serve roughly 125 or so risk-bearing groups and health plans, and we're grateful for the opportunity to partner with AWS and to talk about some of the experiences on interoperability.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining. And Mirza, how about you? What is your background and role at AWS?
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Alex. Yeah, I'm with a group called Health AI within AWS. And what Health AI does is basically build purposeful services for healthcare and life sciences. Been with AWS for over a year now, and my role essentially is to remove technical blockers and make it easier for customers to consume our services. My background prior to AWS, I was leading software development and Enterprise Data Foundation for Envision Healthcare. I did a startup as well, co-founded and successfully exited as well. And I was the brand chief at the Executive Office of the President of the U.S., handling some technology-related departments.
And Anish, we flew past your background, but you have some common threads there. Can you share a little bit about what you did
for
Care Journey?
Well, I was giving a little bit of high-fiving to Mirza over the podcast, which is in the first term of the Obama administration, I was honored to serve as the nation's first chief technology officer, a role that reported directly to the president and was focused on making sure that technology, data, and innovation were applied effectively on the biggest challenges that confronted the country. And prior to that, I was Virginia's Secretary of Technology. And so this idea of public-private collaboration to unlock data, to make differences in people's lives. That's going to be a recurring theme we'll cover throughout this podcast.
Absolutely. And we work in healthcare because we want to make an impact. And the challenge is these are social goods funded by the public sector in many cases. But to drive the innovation, we need collaboration with the private sector. And we have a lot of people who listen to the podcast that either come at it from the investment angle, think venture capital, or from startups themselves. It's going to be a really good one. I'm excited. So without further ado, you know, Anish, can you start just by describing the new CMS interoperability and prior authorization rule and what it aims to accomplish?
Yeah. So this is the third chapter of a multi-chapter book. And so I'll go back to the first chapter and then I'll build up. In the United States, we felt that it was a public good to digitize the nation's health infrastructure. Many countries around the world have since shared that philosophy. And our approach was to build on the foundation of private healthcare IT systems, but to compel those systems to work with each other such that if a doctor on system A was working with a hospital on system B and seeing a patient who's insured by company Z, that those organizations could speak a common language, even if all of their back-end systems were effectively proprietary. Chapter one was to drive the adoption from paper to digital, and we've largely accomplished that goal in a relatively short period of time. Chapter two started to bring about the idea that we need to have a little bit more internet scale infrastructure facilitating the data sharing, not just for a human to see, but increasingly for applications that humans trust and use on their behalf. And so chapter two was largely around patient empowerment. So today, all government-sponsored health plans and all doctors and hospitals are fully capable of, for free, providing an API in a common language, which is in the US, we've built on the FHIR API, which is a global standard, a communication mechanism so that any patient with an app of their choice can understand their medications history, the history of conditions or services they've had, and some of the lab values that reflect their health status. We're entering now chapter three, and that chapter is to evolve what is essentially a consumer internet foundation towards more of a B2B foundation that reuses that same internet scale infrastructure and API foundation to foster data sharing between doctors and hospitals and labs and pharmaceutical companies and everybody else. So what you alluded to, Alex, and to get this conversation started, our US regulator for health insurance, CMS, issued a final rule just a month or so from the recording of this podcast, January of 2024, calling for the creation of three business-to-business APIs off of that same foundation of what is shared with consumers. One, that they be used to reduce the friction of prior authorization. When a doctor wants to order a test or wants to administer a medication or provide a service, today insurance companies have some type of function where they review whether it's medically necessary to perform that service. And that process is manual, takes too long, patients get delayed in the care they deserve, and it overall frustrates everyone. That is now required to move to automation by 1/1/27. And the idea is that doctors can designate applications to understand the rules of an individual health plan's utilization management process. And conversely, doctors can share more detailed information about the patient that justified why they chose the course of action they've chosen with the plan to incorporate into their decision making. That API is currently in production at one or maybe a couple of sites, but it's to be scaled over the coming years. Second, a lot of individual consumers are switching health plans at the end of the year. While they've had the right to take their own data out of plan A and give it to plan B, this rule facilitates plans sharing it with each other because that type of handoff is critical for care coordination. So a B2B version of what the consumer can do is the second. They call that payer to payer. But this conversation is about the more exciting version, which is that doctors now have a right to get access to a patient's claims history so they have better situational awareness before that patient comes into their doors, or to ensure that they follow through on the treatment regimens the doctor prescribed and monitor whether, in fact, they've had those follow-on appointments. That functionality is called the Provider Access API. And what makes this interesting is it creates a very clear power dynamic shift. Today, you may request and a payer may respond, and it's an amorphous commitment on data sharing. Now, no choice. If the doctor is in a treatment relationship with a patient, the health plan must share. We're moving in towards a mandatory interoperability system, which is great for the American healthcare system and means better care coordination for our loved ones.
It's hugely exciting. And anybody who works in healthcare knows how broken it is, but we can become nihilistic and not see progress and name it for what it is. And this definitely is that. But Anish, can you bring this to life in terms of an example from the clinician's perspective? So can you think of a specialty, just make one up, of what it would be like caring for a patient before the Provider Access API and what's going to be enabled once it's broadly adopted?
Let me start with the policy and empirical challenge. We have a healthcare system that is episodic. I've got back pain. I've got a concern that's very acute. I call a doctor to care for me in that circumstance. They treat me and I move on. But if I have an underlying chronic condition that may be the root cause of the problem, that may not have been relevant in the immediate treatment of a condition, but might have been more fundamental, that is often missed in our current healthcare system. So you might go to a cardiologist and they might be managing your heart health effectively. But if they were not aware of your other health status issues, maybe you've got an eye problem and you've got to go in for surgery, the understanding of your heart history's relevance to make sure that you are going to have a safe and effective surgery requires there to be some handoff and collaboration. That doesn't happen as often as it should. And so what the new model allows are for both sides of the previously fragmented system to learn a little bit more context and history about what was happening prior to the patient's arrival. Now, just to make it real, because you asked me to make it real for you, blood pressure control is probably one of the nation's biggest public health priorities. Less than half of the American people who've got elevated blood pressure are currently under control. And if we were able to put them under control, we could save in the United States well over 1 million heart attacks. The dynamic is, if I go to a specialist who's not thinking about my heart, because I see the cardiologist rarely, but I haven't been on my blood pressure meds as much as I should, and my health is deteriorating, but not to the point where I'm calling my cardiologist, I'm worried. If I go to see an ophthalmologist and now they're checking my blood pressure, or they can see in the data history that I've got this elevated hypertension, they can check it. And if there's a problem, way before I have a heart attack or I need to go to the emergency room, they might call the cardiologist and say, hey, you might want to adjust the meds. Something's not working right. And by the way, these are like very cheap medications. So this is not even like an expensive service. But that handoff today doesn't occur, because that isn't the kind of information that would be naturally and readily available. So this is the hope, that not only will the individual doctors have access to information that we can use for situational awareness, but given that they have limited time and that may be an added burden that wasn't compensated, for lack of a better term, there's also the rise of these accountable care organizations that sit in between those two doctors that are employing nurses and care managers who can be that air traffic controller to track for all of this information and be that glue. So it doesn't put all the burden on an individual doctor to review, but potentially be a part of a team that has the right resources. And that's where Care Journey today spends most of its time, and why we're grateful in our AWS partnership that we can deliver at scale a relatively low cost service to ensure that care team has the information they need to coordinate and understand what's happened on a more time-sensitive basis.
It's hugely exciting. And Mirza, at AWS, we're all about handling the undifferentiated heavy lifting so that our customers can drive that end innovation.
So I'd like to come to you and learn a little bit about AWS's early commitment to supporting FHIR and interoperability standards in general. Can you share the thinking behind that, why we support these, and how it enables what Anish was describing that Care Journey is focused on today?
Yeah, sure. I think Anish mentioned several sort of key things there, right? In terms of making interoperability seamless for all the various stakeholders that are handling patients and coordination associated within the environment. That foundation for the APIs that Anish mentioned, for instance, is essentially in FHIR, right? So in December of 2022, AWS announced HealthLake as the FHIR server. And FHIR is interesting in several different ways. One is that it leverages the REST API protocol and RESTful API calls, which are essentially exposing or being utilized to expose the patient access API or the provider access API and then so on and so forth, right? That are mandated by CMS and ONC. So it's leveraging something that is already being used by almost everyone in the world, right? Who's in the internet space. Number one. Number two, FHIR is different in a sense because it's baked in a common data model. And what that means from a developer perspective or a builder perspective is that data model is ubiquitous across the globe. Meaning if I'm building an application in America, that same data model can easily be leveraged by a person in India or Australia or EU. And FHIR is also pronounced not just in the data model, not in terms of just the storing of that data, but also in terms of how that data is exchanged, interacted upon. Meaning it's pronounced to say, hey, store patient name in this particular resource type. Blood pressure, the example that Anish used, right? Store that in a specific observation, vital signs under this specific code. So that way, if I'm a builder, and doesn't matter where I am and what application I'm using to expose it to my locale, I can leverage that segment appropriately without having to reinvent the wheel. Because generally with applications, what happens is that I have to first create the data model and then figure out how do I actually expose it. All of that is gone. So what AWS has done essentially from a health tech perspective is offer this out of the box to say, compliant with FHIR R4 spec, along with the various APIs that you can easily consume. And now you're focused in building differentiated value for your customers, like Care Journey is doing. So that way they can, again, be more focused on what value they're providing to their customers rather than the engineering part, the undifferentiated piece, as you were mentioning, Alex.
Anish, maybe we can just learn a little bit more about how is Care Journey positioned to help healthcare organizations leverage the provider access API and pull this external payer data into their systems? Where do you fit in?
So in May of this past year, so a little under a year ago, CMS announced an upgrade to its FHIR server, exactly as Mirza described, where it makes available a daily feed to one of over 120 accountable care organizations who are the bulk of who Care Journey serves today. So shortly after CMS introduced a service, we built a product with AWS that allows us to access the CMS FHIR server on a daily basis, in contrast with the monthly files that had to be shipped and, to Mirza's point, unpacked, put into a data model, try to analyze it. And so to give you a sense for what we've been doing, we now have 125 customers, about a dozen of them have flipped on this service. So we're in the middle of a growth cycle to get this capability out the door. Now, every day, we find on a typical network of 10,000 patients, 8 new inpatient admissions, a dozen emergency room visits, a dozen patients that have gone in for their annual wellness visit, which is meant to be a comprehensive review of their health status, a couple of new patients that have been diagnosed with diabetes, 3 for chronic kidney disease. I'm giving you an example of the daily effect of a 10,000 life ACO that learns something today that they otherwise would not have known in that data set for 6 to 8 weeks later. And that's the part that's exciting. It's a more timely notification that informs care coordination. That service is going to be the default for how value-based care operates. I remember, just to wrap up this part of the discussion, almost 15, 20 years ago, before I was in the White House, there was a trial run for care management underwritten by CMS, and it was a failure. It was testing whether or not a person with a chronic condition or multiple chronic conditions leaving a hospital could be enrolled in a program that coordinates their care for the following, call it 90 days. One of the reasons it was a failure is that the data that the patient was in the hospital didn't get to the chronic care management company for 60 days after the discharge. Most of the clinical problems occur within a couple of weeks after the discharge. And now with cloud computing, internet scale, FHIR standards, companies like CareJourney can very cost-effectively tap that daily feed, run some basic analytics, and distribute them to care teams so they can do something about those patients that are otherwise falling through the cracks.
So every single person listening to this podcast, and surely you too, have either been a patient or cared for somebody who was in an acute care episode when you had to be the care navigator. When you're in that emotionally vulnerable state, you're tired, usually happens in the middle of the night. It's usually somebody you really love, a child, a spouse, a dear friend. They call you, you go in, and then you're the one quarterbacking the whole thing, right? Obviously, there's a whole service delivery side that comes to this. And Anish, I'm dying to hear some customer examples, but I have a question for Mirza before we go there. These are just numbers until you really think about what does that actually mean when it comes to delivery of care, right? But Mirza, before we go on to those stories, let's talk a little bit more about the tooling and the resources that AWS offers to help healthcare organizations build applications, leverage these Firebase APIs, things like the Provider Access API. What are you excited about?
Yeah, I think when you start looking at how to technically implement what Anish was talking about, there's several sort of key things that I want to pick on. He talked about notifications, let's say, that are being event-driven. He talked about how does the data get in and get exposed and so on and so forth, right? The idea here is that you have one foundational, from an AWS perspective, you have one foundational service in this particular health lake in terms of storing the data, but then, and then making that available from a transaction perspective and doing that all so that way you can actually do event-driven sort of activity, right? When a data load is available or complete, a human being does not have to go in there and say, did that, how's that looking, et cetera, right? That should automatically go ahead and create a notification. If there's specific data points for a given patient based on the business logic for that particular patient, for instance, if the A1C level is going up the roof, somebody ought to be notified because we have remote patient monitoring in place for in many cases. And as such, there needs to be a notification to that care manager, care provider, care team that does it. So from an AWS perspective, what you do is basically get a managed data store within 30 minutes or get it up and running immediately, right? Provide a bunch of parameters, a handful of parameters, encryption key, name, et cetera, right? Because you want to make sure that data is obviously secure. And number two, you bring in that data automatically, seamlessly into that particular data store. And then you're able to first transact on it via the APIs, but also being able to analyze that out of the box, meaning that majority of the data is not just simply consumed from an application perspective or from an event perspective, say, do episodic care, but it's also used for analysis. How's my overall, like Anish mentioned ACOs, for instance. ACOs do a lot of analysis on population health. How is my overall cohort of 10,000 patients who may have, let's say, five top chronic conditions, how is that actually performing? What were the baseline before? What is it trending to towards tomorrow, let's say? So all of that analysis is also possible. We have an ETL, essentially a transform job in the background, where basically that resident data, the FHIR data, is now being made available from analysis with a variety of different tools, right? Amazon Athena is there, Amazon Redshift is there. So that way you can do analysis at scale for value-based care, for instance, as the overall industry is moving from a fee-for-service segment to value-based care sort of provision. So those are the sort of set of tools, again, within that environment that is grounded in HealthLake and then segmented and augmented by the different sort of AWS services that can actually help you deliver the various insights and actions that Anish was talking.
You gentlemen are joining me from the U.S. My accent betrays me. I also used to be in the U.S., but I'm currently in London. And I work a lot with startups, many in Israel, many across Europe, that look to launch in the U.S. If they raise Series A or B funding, they're coming stateside. It's where most of the growth is. And let's just say that when I talk to them, they don't describe their launch experience as rosy as we're painting it out as it's going to be, right? They don't have the perspective that you do, being so close to it. What advice do you have for them as they're trying to skate where the puck is going? Like, what capabilities is this going to unlock for international innovators looking to launch in the U.S. that weren't previously possible?
Yeah, let me make the obvious statement. Build an API-first integration layer on the FHIR standards, because a big reason they don't have a great launch experience is they may love the idea that the startup has conceived of, but the friction or the sludge for having to turn on data sharing, manual file transfer, custom integration, the tax that imposes on a deal basically grounds the deal to a halt. But if you're an API-first company and all they have to do is get your key token, we sign clients up for our Care Accelerator product in an afternoon. They could, if they've already been a Care Journey member, that's a little bit easier. We've gotten through the BAA. But as soon as we've made it through their procurement process, they log in, they get the API token, they hand it to us under the BAA, and we're hitting that CMS server that day and every day thereafter. That's it. And so it's a lot easier if you're an API-first company to minimize the friction of onboarding a new customer. And I think what's going to happen is, at the moment, that may not be what the industry understands. But as we roll out these capabilities, it'll be the way everyone will interact in the not too distant future. So you want to be able to say, you like your native phone app, your native EHR app, and God bless you, but just download ours and hit authorize and give it a shot. And if it doesn't work in a few weeks, turn it off. We can do that on our phones. Heck, my phone's littered with apps that I download and try and discard. That at least feels like the internet economy that should work. Not, oh my goodness, I have to invest an untold man hours of staff to just try this pretty cool startup idea. No bueno.
That reminds me of just composable architectures. And it's a lot of what we try to embrace at AWS, to take the barrier to experimentation and really break it down to a really low level. So you can try, and if it doesn't work, you can wind back. Now, Mirza, how about you? Any advice for early stage companies based on what capabilities these new tools enable?
Yeah, I think API first is a great idea. I would add, for instance, just using leveraging some of the baked in security parameters, right? Use Smart on FHIR framework, right? Don't try to invent your own. Smart on FHIR is another spec that the healthcare industry is adopting more vociferously. So security is extremely important when you're building an app, right? Try to reuse, in a sense, all the various components that are available that are, in a sense, constantly evolving, because there's a large community behind those frameworks that is looking at how do we manage consent, for instance, right? The consent parameters are evolving in every single country. So you don't have to necessarily think about what am I going to do about this mental health condition, that should I expose it? Should I not expose it? The person opt in or person opt out, right? Those are kind of things that you don't necessarily want to make as a developer. What you want to do is leverage existing frameworks in order to accelerate your journey to then go to market sooner than doing it. That applies to data models, that applies to the security model, that applies to how you exchange data using APIs, that applies to how do you share the data, how do you de-identify the data. For instance, we have a service called AWS Data Exchange, ADX, that can essentially broker, in a sense, present that data, right, the de-identified data, to consumers who you may want to publish for research purposes, let's say, right, the data that you are now collecting. So there are a variety of different tool sets. AWS, Alex and Anish, I know you know this, but is API first, right? We have every single component of our services. Doesn't matter which service. You can use an API, you can use an SDK to build on top of, and on top, and then you can also, obviously, we're not going to the realm of FHIR APIs, which is, again, common, not necessarily specific to AWS as well. So there are multiple tools at your fingertips that you can leverage in order to accelerate your go-to-market journey without having to, again, focus on the engineering and getting wrapped up in how cool the technology pieces are.
Okay, good advice. Anish, we got to talk about customers. I'm crazy to talk about customers. What are they doing? Share a couple of examples of how your customers are using Care Journey on AWS to drive better analytics, improve workflows. Tell us some stories.
I'm going to start with a funny one that's in the news at the moment. A bunch of ACOs, clients that we support, they had written a letter, if you will, to the government saying, we've identified what is upwards of $2 billion of fraud. And just to make that as a headline story, I'll describe. I won't name the ACO because I'm sensitive to these sort of litigation issues, but let me give you an example. We, in the ACO feed, the API feed, we're able to identify durable medical equipment like urinary catheters that were not ordered by any doctor in the network. But because Medicare is an open nationwide network, if someone was to create mischief, they could conceivably justify submitting a claim for someone, even if they didn't have a direct connection to the doctors in their neighborhood. And already they're at $5 million of fraud identified through our little investigative journalism, if you will. And one of the challenges, I should say the irony, is one of the names of the stores that was the fraudulent store is called Pretty in Pink, just as a kind of an odd bird. So the ability to get a feed, now they've created an alert system. If we get a feed from a service, a durable medical equipment that does not ordered by us, put them in a queue so we could double check it, so we could catch the fraud before it continues to mount, which is, let's call that the in the news use case. In our core daily use case, we have a couple of very specific things that people find valuable. Most importantly, we identify care gaps where information has come in off the claim that suggests to you that this patient is eligible for a new service, a care management service that member operates. And what we've been doing is putting them in a queue. So organizations can say, oh, wait a minute. I'm a care manager. I log in and say, oh, something happened without our knowledge to folks that I'm responsible for. Let me take an action to call them in to an appointment that they may not have known to go get. Oftentimes that is, I've recently left the nursing home. I've recently left the hospital, but I haven't yet been in touch with my primary care doctor. I'm in a vulnerable state. So keeping a list of folks that have that type of care need, that's our bread and butter kind of use case. And perhaps the more exciting use case is when you've got someone with low back pain, that would be a new diagnosis. If you follow that story, if you see the right doctor at the right time, you end up resolving that pain at much lower cost and much better customer satisfaction. But if you find yourself in the circus of the wrong doctor, you might unnecessarily get surgery. So that kind of longitudinal, call it episode of care, your paths diverge. And so we're building out with companies that our customers use for referral management, a kind of a routing engine to get those patients encouraged to see a doctor that may be best ready, prepared to care for them in need. So those are the main use cases, this idea of identifying care gaps for a care manager to close and to route patients to higher value specialists when there is a handoff. That's our bread and butter. And what I'm excited about is that more timely access to information just means more success on the other side to put that information to work where it's not too late, where the patient's already got my orthopedic surgery scheduled. Why are you calling me primary care doc? I'm good. I'm going down my road. So this way you can be more responsive in a time that's actionable.
I'm just thinking about companies like Time Care and Oncology and Heartbeat Health and Cardiology and companies that are really trying to, you know, take ownership of a specialty and really enable the patient journey. But somebody has an acute care episode and ends up in the healthcare system or has some other event occur. And how do you integrate that back in? And I can just really see how Care Journey enables, acts as the glue and the mesh to pull that together.
You've nailed it in that those are two very good friends of mine, by the way. I love both of those companies. And we have a lot of ACOs that integrate one or both of those solutions. And you're absolutely right. Today, they're siloed in how they plug into the system. But as we have a more common language of more timely health records, then they can all plug into a kind of a updating system to say, oh, today we've diagnosed that a patient may have atrial fibrillation thanks to the heartbeat health monitoring activity. We might want to put them into a program. Or conversely, here's a patient that has just had their first dose of chemo, but oh my goodness, they've experienced vomiting at home. Now they're going to go to the ER. Now we can coordinate their care and maybe avoid that ER visit because we're able to see a little bit more history and context. So that dot connecting exercise is central to realizing the promise of value-based care.
So Mirza, what opportunities do you see for healthcare organizations to leverage the Provider Access API and external payer data alongside the internal data they have at AWS? What use cases do you see for bringing those together?
Yeah, I think once the data is in the data store, right, you could absolutely then make that available to the stakeholders in order to essentially impact the care that's being provided. Multiple ways to do that, right? There are individual patient data that needs to be exchanged at either via patient access or provider access, or even prior auth API that CMS 0057 is talking about. You can do that at a population health level, as I was mentioning, with a bunch of analytical tools as well, and then drive insights. Next best action, for instance, is one of the sort of the key insights that organizations generally have to say, this is what that particular person ought to do, right? From a care management perspective. There's also a concept of something called AI nudges, for instance, where you can, again, using AWS services to create these nudges as, let's say, a person is calling into a contact center and saying, I have back pain, and what do I do? So there could be a variety of things that the person triaging that particular call, that particular patient, can also do via these concept of AI nudges, all grounded in data. So these are all data-driven insights and actions based on the FHIR data model, based on Health Lake in a performant data store. And then if you, from an analysis perspective, again, you can look at that as well. We have the AWS data exchange that's in play as well. So I think there are several different services that a person can use directly out of the box in order to essentially drive their care journey in a sense, right? No pun intended.
And that's Mirza, the vision, my friend.
The name was well chosen. And Mirza, how do we plan at AWS to continue helping customers adapt to new standards as they come out?
I think there are two different layers there, Alex. One is what the CMS ONC guidelines are, right? For instance, the 0057F that Anish was referring to, which was announced January 18th last month. And so that's at a broad level, at a business level, you shall do X, right? Provide data for providers, provide data for patients, et cetera, et cetera. But then there are also within the FHIR world, something called FHIR implementation guides. Those are like your implementation guidelines to say, this is how I actually ought to think about implement. These are all FHIR based, right? This is how I ought to actually start to implement it. So if you start looking down, like start peeling the layers in terms of what does that actually mean from a technical perspective, what you find essentially is that Health Lake has the requisite API endpoints to do that today, even though it may not necessarily be enforceable or accountable from a policy perspective till January 1st, 2027, you have the available tool sets to actually start leveraging that today and start building your application and your business value proposition to your customers. So you don't necessarily have to wait until for the next couple of years. But there are always, these implementation guides are always evolving, right? There is 1.0 today, but there's going to be 1.0.1 tomorrow, right? Perhaps. So those will also be then, and we from an AWS perspective are constantly looking at that and saying, how do we actually incorporate that? So builders like Anish, Care Journey, et cetera, they can actually use that without having to say, what does DaVinci PDEX 1.0 actually mean from an implementation? Don't worry about it. Health Lake has you covered. AWS has a bunch of services that is looking at that on an ongoing basis. So not only future proofing it, but also taking care of it from a today perspective, Alex.
So Anish, when we wrap up this conversation and you go about your day and you're cooking dinner with your family tonight and you're thinking back on the time we had, is there a question you're going to wish that I had asked you?
No, I think I tease Mirza, which is, The path now is to extend the toolkits. The ask is, hey, Mirza, cloud platform partner XYZ, how do we go further and further upstream to make it even easier and easier to source the data? So once the data is in AWS, this is all the wonderful, magical things that we can do. But their next phase is, how do we go get to health plans, providers, stakeholders, and start to connect to their endpoints? So there's a little bit of a connected ecosystem through the cloud platform. So the question was an indirect one to me, to the cloud platforms. And I'll remind us, just to wrap, I was grateful for AWS in, I want to say 2017, I'm going to get the date wrong, probably 2018. The White House and the Trump administration hosted the first Blue Button Developer Conference. And on that stage, without any prompting, meaning there was no regulatory requirement, AWS, Google, Microsoft, Oracle, Salesforce, and IBM stood together and said, we commit to building FHIR native tools in our core infrastructure so we reduce the need for startups in Europe and around the world to having to go do all of that last mile connectivity. And so this roadmap that Mirza described, the announcement they made in December of 2020, is an example of the kind of native tooling. And so continuing to ask questions like, what should the industry do to build more tools, to build out functionality? That would have been a fun, maybe extra 30-minute debate about where and how should individual companies build and where could the massive cloud platforms engage.
It's always good to leave your audience wanting more. So we'll go ahead and peg that down for part two, and I'll drag you both along to join me. Anish, Mirza, it was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.